In eskrima, we don't always meet our opponent head on. We sometimes go sideways. So in my presentation, I will be sideways. Okay. I chose this topic. I sent this for this conference because it's, for one thing, it's an angle on Rizal that has not often been discussed, although there have been claims about this in one segment of our popular culture. What I want to do here is to explore a not so well known, perhaps, or not even that fully explored by many Rizal scholars. Not that I am one, far from it. Okay. But a supposed link between the Filipino martial arts and the life of Dr. Jose Rizal. So I want to explore these narratives of Rizal and the contemporary narratives of Arnis, although perhaps I will be exploring more the link between the two and how these two have been intertwined towards the end. Now, what are these things that we call the martial arts? Okay. In general, whenever we say, oh, nagma-martial arts yan, people have this image of whirling fists and flying kicks. Pinaka-recent, most popular icon ay hindi na pala si Jet Li. And it's the ninja assassin and the Korean guy named Rain. Okay? Deadly sword and deadlier abs. You have to see these pictures on the net to know what I mean. And that's for the younger people. For the older, I'm sorry, not older. For those who, from an earlier age, ayan, ang pinaka-icon natin was Bruce Lee. Right? And then for those somewhere in between, there was Jet Li. And Jackie Chan, of course. Okay? However, the reality is that's the cinematic version. And to a great extent, nakatulong talaga yung pag-popularize ng martial arts through the film. In fact, one of the most often, I think Professor Campos and I should have a discussion about this, because one of the most ways by which many practitioners of the FMA have been making their statements about how effective the FMA is to point out just how many movies have been using the Filipino martial arts in their action scenes, starting with Bruce Lee's famous fight scenes in The Game of Death. Now, in reality, however, the martial arts are what means of training for combat with various means, such as punching, kicking, grappling, throwing, and even bone breaking. The reality of practice is not the same as the one you find in the movies. As an anecdote, just to illustrate the difference between the two, back sometime in the 1980s, actually. Okay. Back in 1983, when I started karate here at UP. The movie Karate Kid had, I'm sorry, this was 1984. The movie Karate Kid had just been showing. And this is the old version of Karate Kid. For some of us here, you might have to look in the DVD stores to find out what I'm talking about. But as a result of that movie, enrollment increased in our karate club. Of course, the teacher was very happy because that was three times as many students. Within 3 weeks, we were back to normal. You can imagine why. It was not as easy as the movie made it look. Well, of course, that's the way it goes. What then do we call the Filipino martial arts, these things that are initialized as the FMA? The difference between most martial arts and Filipino martial arts is that we start with weapons. I brought a sample of the sticks we use in training. Okay. Weapons include the stick, 28 to 32 inches in length. Here's an example. Medyo bugbog na, so it's not as very presentable as some of the things that we use. The sword, the knife, the long stick, spear, and for some teachers, even the whip, the chain, and the rope. Unarmed combat is taught alongside these or at a later period in training. So when this one is coming at your head at high speed, you have to know, number one, how to duck. Second, how to parry his arm. And third, grab it from him. And if ever there is an instructional manual, it would say repeat as necessary. Okay. Now, with this, I'm sorry, no, but sometimes FMA practitioners do not take themselves very seriously for our own survival, I suppose. Unarmed combat is taught, and in more contemporary times, and to my regret, I wasn't able to get hold of pictures from the net, from various sports events that show how the FMA are taught as sports. Yeah, they're very interesting because in the contemporary setting now, just last year, the bill approving the declaring Arnis to be the national martial art and sport was approved. Finally, passed into law. Okay? And it was the initiative of lawmakers who were themselves escrimadores who pushed for the bill to be started. So that one in relation to Rizal and the martial arts, we'll see later towards the end. Next slide, please. Now, you know, when we talk about Filipino martial arts, there are many kinds of ways to look at it, mostly because they are different styles that are distinguished themselves by particular features of movement. A particular distance, a distinguishing set of movements, a mindset. So there are styles that use what we call an abanico, fanning movement. Okay? There are others that prefer to use vertical movements, others that have follow-through, others that have a one-half strike, one-half beat movement, and so on. Naming conventions. Well, there are those that come after geographical location. There's a style of Arnis called Balintawak, for instance. Historical events. Even historical figures after personalities. There is one style in Negros that proudly calls itself Lapu-Lapu Arnis. Very interesting, you know, because that's quite a name to live up to. I mean, if you say that you're a practitioner of Lapu-Lapu Arnis, eh, you bet panindigan mo yan in whatever way, right? And even after religious imagery, again, there is a style known as Tres Personas Escrima, which refers to the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. But then again, in indigenous Catholicism, Tres Personas can also have another meaning. And so there's a link to the mystical world in the Philippines. Okay? Now, here's the main point. Si Rizal nga ba? Was he really an escrimador? You see, there are popular publications such as Presas, Remy Presas, you will find Presas books constantly reprinted and available in National Bookstore. Dalawa yun eh. The Tagalog edition is green cover, and the English edition is pink. And another version of his work with different material, but more or less the same introduction and claims, is colored white, The Practical Art of Escrima. And then another Cebuano author, a master named Cañete, or actually the Cañete family, also made their own manuals, which also include a historical claim about Rizal having practiced Arnis. And even more so, these books are interesting to look at because they say, okay, not just Rizal, Bonifacio, Antonio Luna, Gregorio Aglipay, and many other heroes of the revolution were also known as escrimadores. And so I only work on Rizal for this conference, but I would really like to have a discussion with our colleagues, in historian colleagues, and find out exactly who among these others really did do escrima as well. Bonifacio, you can understand why. The most popular iconic images of Bonifacio is him brandishing a bolo. And therefore, by extension, kung magurong gumamit ng bolo, escrimador yon. But the question is, sabi ng ibang historians, oh really? The truth of the matter was that the revolution relied on bolos precisely because one, they didn't have enough funds for guns. When they got enough funds, nakisuyo pala ang mga pinuno ng revolution, and this is something I found out while, and courtesy of Dr. Ambeth Ocampo's writing. So, nakisuyo pala sila, and finally, naka-negotiate silang bumili ng barrel sa mga partido ni Dr. Sun Yat-sen. Ito yung masaklap. Papasok na yung barko sa Manila Bay, bumagyo. Lubog ang barko. Wala na namang barrel. That the revolution got as far as it did and succeeded the way it did were it not for the backdoor deal done by the Americans and the Spaniards. That shows something about the tenacity of revolutionary heroes. Okay. But we go back to an older publication called Mga Karunungan sa Larong Arnis. And you know, the publications of the mid-20th century mostly were in English. Only one was translated into Tagalog, and again, that's Remy Press's work. This one, the older publication, we fortunately have copies in the UP Main Library and a photocopy at the CHK. The one in the main lib is, it needs also further work on preservation. It's that old style glossy paper. Okay, and Yambao comes from Bulacan. Now, he mentions in his chapter the earliest mention of the heroes as Arnisador or FMA practitioners. And this book was written entirely in Tagalog. Bulacan dialect Tagalog. So the language takes a bit of getting used to. Okay, including the terminology sounds esoteric to people who are used to NCR Tagalog. Okay. One more thing of distinction pala. This book was oldest of all the known Filipino martial art books because it was published in 1957. And the printing press that made it possible was, tada, UP Press. Galing sa atin. Fantastic, no? Okay. Navarro, here's Rene Navarro also explicitly wrote an article, and this was published back in the 1970s also, claimed that Rizal studied Arnis de Mano, which is another name for the FMA, in his hometown in Laguna, and that he was skilled, ito yung maganda, Arnis, Western fencing, boxing, grappling. Wow. You know, yung ang ganda ng image na dinadraw out, no? Which is a pity that, you know, the filmmakers who made the film about Rizal never thought to take this into account. Had they done that, that would have added another detail to the cinematic image of Rizal. Imagine mo, no? Yeah, not just fencing, but nag-aarnis. Wow, that would have been something else. Huh? However, ito yung problema natin. I got interested in this because of the claims in Rizal. However, available materials on our hero do not mention his having learned Arnis at all. Works by the classical work, biography by Austin Craig, wala doon. Kay Austin Coates, wala doon. Kay Leon Guerrero's work, The First Filipino, wala din doon. In fact, nothing. Not even in his correspondence, is there any mention of Rizal having trained in Arnis. Dr. Ambeth, many years ago, I sent an email to Dr. Ocampo, Ambeth Ocampo, just on the chance that he might be able to respond because I was reading his columns in the Inquirer. He told me, he was very gracious and replied promptly. He said, we don't have any evidence, not from the letters, not from the books, not from the any biographical notes. So ano kaya na? What's going on kaya? The only thing we do know is that Rizal excelled in fencing. So to be fully appreciate the significance of fencing, you should know that in the 19th century, fencing was not merely a sport like it is today. It was a seryosong martial art yon. It was often used for self-protection and for self-development. Rizal was very much into physical fitness. Okay? And you know, that's for settling disagreements that could not otherwise be healed. Muntikan na ang bata magduelo at one point si Luna, Antonio Luna at si Rizal. Kasi napikon din si Rizal dahil may patutsada si Luna tungkol sa isa sa mga babae sa buhay niya. Nelly boasted. Baka yung Nolly, magiging Nelly. Hoy! medyo na natauhan na si Luna the next day, hindi na nag-anon. Nawala na yung lasing. But you know, the fact that he actually did challenge Luna to a duel using fencing. This is Rizal fencing with Luna in Paris. And that shows how different the arts, the two arts are. Okay, but this is the essence of, see, in this particular photograph, I think Rizal has the upper hand. Kasi nawala lang detail dahil he had to enlarge it, but the sword should have been, the sword here, the foil is already bending and over here at the heart. So, what are we going to make of this now? Was he an escrimador in the sense of being a practitioner of the Filipino martial arts? I mean, language-wise, you should also note that escrima is the word for fencing in Espanol. And that depending on the orthography and the one who's writing it down, it can be written as esgrima, with the letter G, or Eskrima, letter C. What then? Okay. So now we have the claim, and then we don't have any evidence for the claim, but it's still being repeated. What then now? I argue here that a claim like this is not just simply to be assessed as to whether or not it's factual. The significance goes beyond whether or not it is supported by documentary evidence alone. Instead, we have to look at a wider picture and ask ourselves some questions. One, what's the significance of such a claim? That Rizal was a practitioner of the indigenous martial arts. Second, what's the relation to the time frame in which these claims were published? This one needs a little bit more work on contemporary and popular history, by the way. Claims like this are significant in the sense that what? One, they are part of what we call a heroic narrative. They are part of epic literature, actually. We tend to think of epic literature as those big stories of people of long ago. Actually, we do have a contemporary epic narrative and oral literature about Rizal that is also supplemented and complemented by narratives located in film and in publication, in articles and in books. It's still a form of part of our, yes, we would have to look at it this way. It is a part of our folklore, okay? A form of our traditional knowledge in a more contemporary setting. Rizal is a folk hero, a larger-than-life stature possessed of outstanding qualities. That's how we construct him. And you compare this to some of the epic heroes. If you will find examples of these translations in English in Damiana Eugenio's compilations, especially the epics. Okay? Tignan nyo dito, look up the heroes I'm referring to. Labaw Dunggun and Hubadapnon. These are from the Central Panay region. These are the heroes from the epic story, the Hinilawod, from Central Panay. The stories of the Hinilawod actually are not one but many, depending on the region, depending on the municipality, depending on whether you're collected the story from the lowland or the upland. All right. Lamang. Ayan, for the Ilocanos. Biag ni Lamang. Dato Bantugan. What's common with all of them? Most of them are male, but many of them are heroes. They serve the community in some way. They undergo a transformation from ordinary person to extraordinary. That's Rizal, by the way. Right? And so on. You do have an epic heroine that is, this one, many Pinoys would not be familiar with her, but her name is Bolak Sonday. Yeah, she becomes, for one scholar, she became a model for early Filipino feminism. Because Bolak Sonday exercises her martial virtues and qualities not so much for self-glorification like most males do, but because she has to protect the community and especially rescue her brother who got into trouble. Interesting thing in Filipino epic, the men may have, when the men get into trouble, it is the women who rescue them. Now, it's not exactly, I don't know where we find something similar here in Rizal's narrative, but that's for another conference. There's a question about whether she was for real a hero or it was a product of another oral tradition or writer's fantasy. I think that's also a pretty controversial topic because then in Pangasinan, she is very much used as part of the motif and epic in their folk tradition. Okay, so if it's not, if Rizal becomes a folk hero, and if you don't have any basis for finding out his or agreeing that he did practice Eskrima and that he was more of a Western fencer, so what does it make now? I mean, were these people lying? Was it more a question of wanting to claim something? I think we have to look at a wider perspective. What purposes do these claims serve? Yeah, my father's work on epic literature gave me a starting point. Why? Because he said that oral history, oral literature, by its very nature, has less to do with, well, it's more actually has to do with embodying a people's set of beliefs, a people's set of traditions, a people's way of looking at themselves. And in fact, folk literature, like the epic work that he did in Santo Panay, was actually a living tradition in the sense that people passed it on, transmitted it, enacted parts of it. They were generous enough to share it with a stranger like him.